It's Patrick, and I am really excited here as we do Pat's Peeps podcast number 57. I can't even believe it's number 57 already, but I am truly honored here on Pat's Peeps 57. This is the first day of March, by the way, and it is cloudy and overcast, and we are expecting a ton of snow up in the foothills. I don't know if I will be snowed in or not, so I don't know if I will make it to my show this evening, but I will tell you this, either way, I will be on my show. Even if Bruce is hosting tonight, I will still be on the show for a little bit on the Pat Wall Show on KFPK Radio, heard everywhere on your iHeartRadio app. So yeah, that's what's happening today, so we'll see if we get buried in snow or not. But I tell you what, it's a Friday morning. It's very gray. I'm sitting at this restaurant, as you can hear in the background. It's Wings Restaurant. It's at the Auburn Airport. And let me tell you, I'm sitting here with a special person who I'm just getting to know. She's a complete sweetheart. And her name is Victoria Yeager. She is the widow of Chuck Yeager, who is obviously many people in this country and in the world look at as this guy was a hero. This guy is a man who broke boundaries that many of us couldn't even imagine. The speed of sound, setting the precedent for, I mean, astronauts and the space race and so many other things. He was a fighter pilot, Chuck Yeager. But you know, there's a lot more to that story. And so I am so delighted to get to know Victoria Yeager, Chuck's widow. And Victoria, I really appreciate you. We're sitting here having breakfast. How nice. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Pat. It's really great to get to know you. Thank you very much. Really enjoying it.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, we've spoken before. We've done an interview before. I call it a conversation more than interview. And she writes books, and I'm sitting here looking at it. And you should really check these out for yourself. We talked before about one of the books that you wrote, Victoria, which is 101 Yeagerisms, which I just love. And I flipped a page just randomly, okay? So what is a Yeagerism? First, tell us, what is a Yeagerism? This, I would imagine that this is almost like, this would just be things like Yogi Berra would say, Yogi Berraisms, you know. So these would be things that Chuck might say.
Yeah, Chuck Yeagerisms, he had so many that were just either falling down laughing or they were so poignant and so right on and great advice. And it's a lie. There's actually 131. And there's a few I didn't put in there. A little risque.
So when you, is that right? You didn't put the risque ones
in there?
No,
I did not.
So when you had this idea, so you, obviously when you say you have 131 Yeagerisms, that tells me that at some point you started keeping track of the Yeagerisms because it's hard for a person to just, you know, sit and just remember 131 things that a person says in a very unique way. So how did you start keeping track of these?
Well, I kind of did along the way. I was with him almost 21 years, but after he died, about 11 months later, I was actually quite sick on Christmas. And so I stayed in bed and I started just throwing them out there and thinking about him and thinking about situations. And so I just, and then I'd start playing pickleball. I was playing pickleball and I'd have to stop and say, wait a minute, just a minute. I'd have to write it down because if I tried to remember it, there's no way.
Right.
And they're like, what? What? We're in the middle of a point here. I don't care. You can have the point. I got to write this down.
Right. See, that is so important. That you make a good point. I tell people all the time if they're interested in, let's say, talk radio. I train people in talk radio. So you have to, when you get that idea in your head, you have to text it to yourself or you have to somehow write it down. Generally, I will text because 2 minutes later, this idea you had is like it's gone already. And you're going, what the heck was that idea I just had? So
right. That's
a great way to do it. I mean,
I'm still the person that has to go back to where I was to remember why I went into a room. So
Right. We all do that, you know. I love when people say, well, you're getting of a certain age. I said, man, I did that in my teens. Are you kidding me? I couldn't remember why I walked in the room. Not everything is about age, you know. Besides, we're not that old, so stop it already.
Right.
So we're at this restaurant, Wings, which is at the Auburn Airport. How long has it been since you've been here?
About 10 years, actually. General Yeager and I used to fly down here all the time. And then he'd give me the controls to go back. And one time he gave me the controls, and we get back to Grass Valley. He had said, put me on final at Grass Valley. So I did, but we were below the airport. He's like, oh my God. He cobbed it, got up above the airport.
Oh!
And you were flying?
I was flying up to the airport. I didn't have a license yet, and so I...
Well, and so she asked me, and this is no slam on Victoria, because she's a sweet person, and I completely trust her. She said, I told her, you know, look, you're married to a man, Chuck Yeager. People look at this guy. This is a man's man. This person did things. He was really where eagles dare. This man did things like, oh my God, how can you be the first person to break the speed of sound? I said, now you're sitting here talking to a guy, me, who I'm afraid to even get in an airplane. I feel so emasculated, Victoria.
Well, I have to say that every small plane, I would get sick until I flew with Chuck Yeager. And even after I flew with Chuck Yeager, actually his buddy, Bud Anderson, was flying and I got sick. And Chuck started laughing at me. I thought, how rude. But I thought, that's the perfect response because I was embarrassed. But if you're laughing, you start laughing with them in between getting rid of your food.
Sure.
But it was great. It was
nothing like a couple of chuckles in between heaving into a bag. You know what I mean? It's part of the reason I don't really want to go on these small planes. So let's start right there. So Chuck taught you how to fly an airplane.
He did. I had to go to a licensed civilian instructor just to get the proper hours, but he taught me how. In fact, he nixed about the first four or five CFI, certified flight instructors, and then he was right. They were terrible. And the last one we thought we could work with. So every time after, he came out to every lesson. After every lesson, we would drive home and he would correct them. And I'd have questions. I don't understand that. Why would I do that? And he'd say, yeah, don't do that.
Oh my God.
It's all about safety.
I mean, that's pretty cool when you can tell people not only that you're a pilot, but who taught you? And they say, well, how'd you learn how to do that? Oh, I don't know. Chuck Yeager taught me. Chuck Yeager. Well, there was a Chuck Yeager that broke the speed of... I know, that's my husband now. That's amazing. So Chuck Yeager.
Well, I'll tell you something else, though, because when I did learn when I was 21 a little bit, and I soloed when I was 21, but I asked the instructor, how do you get into a spin? How do you get out of it? She said, you get into a spin, you die. And I said, okay, how do you get into it so I can prevent it? She wouldn't tell me, so I walked away from flying. And then 20 years later, I meet the man, that's his job, getting in and out of spins. So it was great. And the other thing that happened, you're about to say something.
Oh, no, just,
and the other thing that happened is that we got into a lot of situations that he got us out in a nanosecond where I would not have survived, maybe. Because there's one time where the wind picked us up at Grass Valley, was heading us straight towards the trees, and he cobs it, which means put full power on. And I'm like, oh good, this is going to hurt even more. We're going to hit the trees faster. No, he was getting airflow over the wings and more control, and he brought it back and landed it beautifully. Another time we were flying over the Sierras coming from Baron Hilton's ranch, and he was at the controls, thank goodness, because we dropped a lot. And he didn't say anything, and about 5 minutes later he said, well, that was quite a drop. And I said, okay, how much of quite a drop was that? And he said, oh, 10, 15 feet. I was like, okay.
10 or 15 feet?
Yes, in this little tiny airplane. And it was no big deal to him. I mean, he got his attention, but he just kept flying. I was thinking, thank God it wasn't me at the control.
What's that like for a guy who's like me, Victoria? We're talking about Victoria Yeager, widow of Chuck Yeager, the great American pilot. What's that like when you have experienced that sudden drop like that?
Well, I'm with Chuck Yeager. I'm the greatest pilot in the world.
Right.
So that's why I never got sick in the airplane with him, even with situations like that. There was another time where we had tail wheel failure, right brake, right rudder failure, and we went down a cliff 20 feet, and he kept it on as best he could. He kept it so we didn't flip. It was amazing. And so afterwards, I thought, am I going to want to fly after this?
Oh,
this
was
and the third highest scoring German ace said to me, that was a bit too exciting, wasn't it? And I said, yeah, I think it was. And so, but afterwards, when it was my turn to fly, when he asked me to fly with him again in the same kind of aircraft, which was a Warbird, I said, yeah, I can't believe you can live through that. I'm good.
Well, I mean, I know what you're saying when you're going, okay, yeah, I'm with Chuck Yeager. I guess if you're going to pick out a person that you want to be with in that situation, if you have to be with someone and be in that situation, Chuck Yeager's probably the guy that you want there piloting that plane. I mean, I can recall going to Sonoma Raceway where they had these two-seated Indy cars, and they said to me, they invited me to go ride in these Indy cars around the track. And they asked me, they said, who would you like to ride with? And I just was being facetious.
because I just blurted out, well, I'm going to go with Mario Andretti. I don't know, but I figured these were just test drivers out on this track. I said, I want to go with Mario Andretti. And they go, okay, stand right here. And I went, what? I go, what are you talking about? And it was Mario Andretti. I mean, this is the Chuck Yeager. I don't want to compare the two with apples and oranges, but like, this is the guy when it comes to racing, the legend. And I remember, just like what you just said, look, if I'm going to be in it, because I'm terrified, I'm scared, I mean, am I going to get sick in this thing? It's a street course. I get motion sickness easily. As I'm going around this track, scared to death, that's what I was thinking. It's Mario Andretti. It's a 73-year-old Mario Andretti, but it doesn't matter. It's Mario Andretti. So I get that. But then you went ahead and said, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do this. So how did you decide, okay, even after these experiences, I'm still going to go ahead and get my pilot's license and I'm going to pursue this?
Well, people thought I got my pilot's license in case Chuck got older and really couldn't fly. That wasn't the case. Chuck, even at the very end of his life, I would give him the controls if there was a problem. You take over, because in a semi-conscious state, he could get us safely somewhere, if anybody could. And so I was just lucky. I was just so darn lucky. I mean, Robin Old said to me, what did you do when we were harrowingly going down the cliff? I said, I stayed the heck out of the way. I'm with the greatest pilot in the world, and the best thing I can do is not do anything, you know, just make sure I'm out of the way of the controls. I was just great. I'm just so grateful. I'm grateful now when I fly. He's in the plane with me. He's in my head.
Oh, well, Victoria told me that she has, I think it was 4 rules. when you're flying, because she said, so does that mean you're never going to fly with me because you're afraid? I said, probably not. It would take a lot for me to convince me to do that. I'm just being honest. And then she tells me her 4 rules, and I would like you to tell us your 4 rules if we're riding with you in a plane. And I want to know, when you were with Chuck and in these situations, I don't know, going over a cliff or about to hit trees apparently, whether you initially broke any of the rules that you have now set.
I get very, very quiet when there's a danger ahead, because that's the best thing you can do is stay calm and try to figure out what's afterwards. I go bonkers, but while it's happening, I'm good. But the rules are, the first one is no screaming. The second one is, if you're going to barf, make sure you make it all in the barf bag, not on my plane. I don't want to clean it out.
You want to clean it out.
And the third, I think you can hear Chuck in there, is don't touch nothing unless I tell you.
Right.
And the fourth one is, after we land and we stop the plane, we get out, do not kiss the ground where I can see you doing it. Thank you very much. There have been a couple of people that have flown in the back with me, and after we land, you can just hear this big sigh. It's so funny. It's like, oh God, we're down.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with me. It's them and flying is what.
So even when you're looking at trees, even if you're like, oh God, and you're going over the cliff, as you say, there's no panic, there's no screaming. You held true to that.
I held true to that. I mean, in my head, I might have a few four-letter words going on.
I have a few right now, and I'm not even in that plane. It was a long time ago, but oh my God, the terrifying thing. I'm looking at, I just turned to a page of the book here, of your book, the 101 Chuck Yeagerisms. I just randomly turned to, let's see what page I had, page 82, on page 82 and 83. So let's go to the Yeagerism on page 82. Quote, anytime a pilot doesn't have to bleed, it's a good thing.
Well, that came from, we were at the Air Force Academy, and all these kids want to be fighter pilots, like World War II, but there's not going to be any more dogfights. If you're in a dogfight, Chuck said, somebody's going to blow you out of the water from the periphery. But anyway, they said, what do you think about these unmanned vehicles and these drones? And what do you think about not having a pilot in there? And they were expecting him to go rah-rah fighter pilot, and he said, oh, no, no. Anytime a pilot doesn't have to bleed, it's a good thing. Meaning, if he's not in that, and he's back there, as Chuck said, they get combat pay, and they're sitting there drinking coffee at their console and all.
Sure.
That was a little silly, but yeah, no, he was right.
And then going back to what we were just talking about the, if you're going to get sick, make sure it's all in the bag and not my plane. On page 83, a Chuck Yeagerism, quote, a fighter pilot's breakfast, a coffee, a puke, and take off. Tell me about that.
Well, actually, what was funny is that that's what he did. He was puking, and his commanding officer came back and said, does this happen often? Or I think it was his dad or his commanding officer. And he said, no. And he said, but I don't recommend it.
This is all in her book, by the way, which I highly recommend. I mean, this is obviously an American hero. I mean, I would even go beyond that. I would say he is a world hero because many of the things that we see these days were you can attribute to the brave actions of Chuck Yeager. How long were you guys married?
We were married. We were together almost 21 years. But also, when you talk about breaking the sound barrier, he also, after he was shot down during World War II, he carried a wounded airman over the Pyrenees for about anywhere from 15 to 20 miles. And there was 3 foot of snow. It was March. It was the coldest, in the beginning of April, coldest winter in history at that time, 1944. So, and most people would have just left him and shot him because you can't let him be captured by the Germans and give away everything. And so he carried him and saved his life. So there's a lot more to, he was a hero long before he broke the sound barrier, and I'm actually going to try to get this documentary done on that part of his life. And the other thing too, I wanted to mention that I'm coming out with a new book, just uploading it to Amazon today, hopefully. And it's called Chuck Yeager, What a Ride, My Amazing Life with the Original Right Stuff, Chuck Yeager.
I love it. Congratulations on your first book and then on your second book. When will this, you said you're going to be releasing it, you're going to be doing, releasing it today or what?
Well, you upload it to Amazon, I think it takes 7 days, but I'll be announcing it on our Twitter feed, Jen Chuck Yeager, and on the Facebook page and announcing it all over the place. But this one's about my life with Chuck Yeager, and people said, in all your pictures, you're smiling. I said, yeah, we were happy.
Well, perhaps we can, at a future date when the book comes out, maybe we'll have you on my radio show as well, the Pat Walsh Show on iHeartMedia. Maybe we can have you there to talk about that as well. So let me ask you, how did you go? So this book that you're writing now, whereas the first one is Yeagerisms, and really the world knows, I think, about the accomplishments of Chuck Yeager. That's been talked about many, many times. But what I do love in your new book, What a Ride, is that you talk about more of your private life with Chuck. Now, I have not had the opportunity, obviously, to read it. You haven't released it yet. I will be getting a preview copy today, and I can't wait to read it. But I'd like to know how you met Chuck. We'll start there. How did you guys meet?
So I had a deal from CBS, and they were and another group, and they were really not living up to what they said they would do. And they would get, it was a spiritual Raiders of the Lost Ark for television. And so and they were trying to get rid of the spirituality. So I went to hike in a place I'd hiked for a couple of years where there were beautiful March spring flowers and a beautiful sunny day. And I just wanted to be by myself to try to sort out what I was going to do. Was I going to walk away from a big chunk of money because it was all wrong and they were trying to cheat? Or should I do it? Anyway, so I'm thinking all these things, and this handsome, gorgeous guys coming down the hill, and the sun, I think he had a halo. I mean, the sun was behind him, and I said, hey, great day. And he said, I just got back from Australia. And I said, well, I just got back from Africa. What were you doing in Australia? And he said, I was teaching software guys. I said, I was doing volunteer work. I need to refill the coffers. Can you get me a job? And he said, no, I'm not a software guy. I'm Chuck Yeager. And I was like, oh, wait, is that a common name in the military? Is he the Chuck? Who was Chuck Yeager? I'm trying to think all this. I mean, I've just been with tribes in Africa, so I'm not really back in the modern world. And he said, and I said, okay, well, will you take me up in a fighter jet? And he said, no, that costs tens of thousands of taxpayer dollars. I said, well, I pay taxes.
A man worried about taxpayers' dollars. God bless him.
So I pay taxes. So then he said, I got to go. And he starts down the trail, and I sort of and then I turn and I say, well, wait a minute. You won't get me a job, won't take me in a fighter jet. You want to go hiking tomorrow? And he said, he looks at his watch and he said, it's 3 o'clock. That's my truck down there. It's got an X1 on it. Do you know what that is? I said, I used to be so good in school. I don't know. And he said, broke the sound barrier. I said, oh, that's right. That's you. I saw the movie. So he said, what movie? He still wasn't sure about me. And I said, the right stuff? But you look much better than Sam Shepard. And he said,
oh, my God.
So he said, all righty then. He kept going. And then he stops. I'm going up the hill. He said, wait a minute. So I turn around and he said, I'm much older than you are. You can't go too fast. I said, we're only 50 feet from the start of the trail. You think I stopped to talk to you? I'm tired. So then we met the next day and...
And hiked.
And
how was the hike?
Well, it was great. Well, so he was actually 4 minutes late, and I was 20 minutes early. So, you know, that seems like hours. I'm thinking there's no way he can call me. He doesn't have my number. And if I call his office, he'll say, sure, sure. So I'm thinking all these things. I'm thinking, well, if I hike this way, he was going the other way, maybe we'll meet again. Who knows? So he shows up, and I run across the little tiny road, and he gathers me up in this great big bear hug, and he's got aftershave on. And I think that's so sweet. And he never let go for almost 21 years.
Were you thinking like, geez, wait a minute now. I'm on a hike. I just came back from Africa. I'm on a hike. And randomly, I just met Chuck Yeager. Like, wait a second. And now tomorrow I'm hiking. Did that kind of go through your mind? Like, I can't even, or did you, what did you think?
Well, if you look at my entire life, even before I met Chuck, I had a lot of random things happen. And so they just were part of life. So it wasn't particularly surprising. I'm just, especially now looking back, thinking, oh, thank God. Because it was what I was looking for in a relationship, didn't think it existed. And as soon as we met, we had a connection, not a love at first sight thing, but a connection. It's just comfortable. That was it. And
there's 36 years difference.
Yeah, 35 years.
35 years.
Months, and 4 months.
Okay, I just wanted to be, okay, I'm glad you were precise about that. And that was not even an issue whatsoever.
I'm the youngest in my family, youngest of the cousins. I've always been with older people, and they're much more interesting. And his generation is a lot more interesting than anything afterwards, really.
I think I may have to agree with that. How did the hike go?
It was great. The first thing he said to me was, I'm never getting married again. I said, works for me. I'm never getting married.
Oh, wow.
So, and then we continued on, and it was all fine. And
so they're never getting married again. Now, if you, when you read her new book, and I encourage you to do so, What a Ride, right?
Yes.
Okay. One of the things, I think one of the first things that you mention in the book, and I'm paraphrasing, you can correct me here, because I know I'll be wrong, but it was something to the effect, Victoria Yeager, we're having a breakfast at Wings at the Auburn Airport with Victoria Yeager, the widow of Chuck Yeager. She's a really sweet, kind person, by the way. I just wanted to say that. One of the things that you, in your new book, that you start off by saying is, look, I think you show a picture, or maybe you showed that to me privately, you're at an Oak Ridge Boys concert, the Oak Ridge Boys, and it was something about, geez, you were just too busy having fun. Explain what I'm missing in that whole equation and in that quote.
Well, a lot of people, Chuck always wanted to write a book about us at a certain point, but we were too busy. We were just enjoying life. I mean, we did a lot of things. As I reread that book, I'm thinking, wow, that was us. We were in Pakistan, we were in Afghanistan, we were in France a few times where he was shot down and met the Maquis that had helped him. We did a lot. It was really great. So you don't have time to sit and reflect on what you're doing. You just do it. Just enjoy it.
What would some of us maybe be surprised about Chuck, you and Chuck? Like, was Chuck into Led Zeppelin? Like, what was, like, something that, you know, that maybe we don't know about Chuck that might surprise us?
He won the Nevada County Fair Men's Baked Goods Contest.
What? Really? What did he? Really? The Nevada County Fair? What did he make?
He made, it was Chuck Yeager's award-winning version now of Grandma Yeager's butterscotch pie. P-A-H for pie, right? So. And here's the funny story. You being a radio man, the guy who was did the radio up in Nevada City, he won it for 15 years straight with his Dutch apple pie. And suddenly Chuck Yeager comes in, and he said on the radio, said, well, I guess if you have to lose to somebody, Chuck Yeager's not a bad person to lose to, but maybe he won because his name's Chuck Yeager, blah, blah, blah. Well, them was fighting words for me. So we sent him a piece of the butterscotch pie. We also gave the intermediary a piece. And then he sent us back a piece of his Dutch, but he didn't send two, so the intermediary ate his Dutch apple pie, so we never got to taste it. But he took it, and on air he said, I'm going to taste this on air so you have my immediate reaction. So he takes a bite, and there's maybe 20 seconds of silence, which you know is days on radio, right?
Oh, yes.
And he said, well, I guess that is pretty good. I guess that should have won.
Wow, that is.
And when we went to the fair, there was only a little tiny piece left where the judges are only supposed to take a couple bites each, but we couldn't find it because there's only a little tiny piece left. It's good. It's very good.
What was it like being Chuck's wife? I mean, obviously, this is a guy who, you know, people really looked up to Chuck, you know. God rest his soul, by the way. You know, people looked up to this man. And I can imagine you were, you met a lot of people. You were in a lot of circles. You, you know, what was it like being with Chuck Yeager?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of people were terrific. They always were surprised that we were just regular folks. I mean, Chuck, that's the other thing about Chuck. He was pretty gruff, but that was to keep the rude people away from him.
There were, when you say gruff.
Well, he would. Some people would come up and try to be different, and they, instead of being polite, they say something silly, and he'd sell them to get away from him. But if you were polite and pleasant, he would chat with you, and he was just a regular guy, and I mean a regular guy that broke the sound barrier and had a great sense of humor.
Hey, we have a visitor right now.
Hey, Richard. Richard helps me with my airplanes because he knows about maintenance really big time, and my maintenance guy, as you know, Chuck is no longer with me. So Richard is so kind and always helps me when I need help and advice.
Well, it's nice to meet you, Richard. We're sitting here doing a podcast. So
cool. Hi, how's everybody doing?
So you're her mechanic. What is it?
I'm based at the same airport that she is.
Uh-huh.
And I just give her a hand when she needs one.
Okay. She's a nice gal, isn't she?
Yeah, most time.
Most of the time.
Careful.
You definitely look like a flyer. That is one cool jacket you have right there, man. I love the Daffy Duck. Is that Daffy? I guess it is Daffy, right?
Well,
it's sort of a
uncle,
sort of a kind of like a almost like a Daffy, but it's got the ammo and the big gun. That's an awesome jacket.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah.
You guys.
Thanks, Richard.
Lunch,
too? We had it. We had breakfast.
Enjoy your podcast.
Thank you very much. See, it's just nice to meet people like that. Yeah, so this is Victoria Yeager. She's got a new book coming out, and I would recommend really checking out the 101 Yeagerisms. I think you'll enjoy that, and What a Ride, the new one that's coming out from Victoria.
You asked me about what it was like being his wife. I was incredibly honored. It was really amazing to be part of that. Part of his world and family. A couple of people went to the cliche, oh, I married him for his money or fame or all that. But the head of the CEO of ConocoPhillips said to me, what money? I said, thank you. I have an MBA in finance from Columbia. If money were my game, I'd be on Wall Street. And then I also said to him, I used to be cute. So there were billionaires that wanted to marry me, but you know, I wanted to be in love with them.
Oh my God.
And then I said,
and she still is cute. Don't let her pretend like she's not.
But I also said, look, you're not insulting me. You're not insulting me by trying to better my life. You're insulting him saying he has nothing else to offer but fame and money. But I tell you what, that guy privately is the greatest person I've ever met. And I've met a lot of people. I've traveled around the world. So
what made him the greatest person?
Integrity, honesty, loyalty to the nth degree. Affectionate. He wouldn't be affectionate with everybody necessarily, but he started hugging people a little bit more when I came along. And he just kind and incredibly generous. Incredibly generous. And generous with his time and with his advice. Our disagreements lasted maybe 5 minutes. And then he'd have me rolling on the floor laughing, or I'd have him rolling on the floor laughing. I mean, it's just because everything's the small stuff. After you fought a war, everything's the small stuff, right?
Well, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a very good point. How did he feel about, I mean, I don't want this to sound weird or anything, but how did he feel about being the celebrity Chuck Yeager?
Oh, so I'll tell you a quick story. It's also in the new book. It was so he fired everybody because they're all taking advantage. The, you know, all the financial, the secretary, everybody. So, and he gave me all like 5 jobs to do. Gasp. And so I would have a meltdown about once a month. So I was having a meltdown and I said, I am so sick and tired of this Chuck Yeager business. And he said, you? I'm always Chuck Yeager. Well, you got a point there, bud.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to remember. He was in television commercials. I don't know if it was... Honest to God, I was going to say AC Delco. I swear to God, I was going to say, in my mind, it was like something like, hi, Chuck Yeager, AC Delco with spark plugs or something, right?
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah. No, yeah, he enjoyed that because he loved tinkering with motors and engines and things like that. In fact, when he was 12, he took apart an engine, and his father came along with this engine all taken apart, and he said, son, you're going to be able to put that back together? I took it apart, didn't I? And he did. He put it all back together without any extra pieces.
Boy, are we the opposite person, myself. I came and work on a vehicle. This guy's taking it apart, putting it together. He's flying. He's doing all this stuff that I could never. I just could never do any of this.
It helped him after he was shot down, though, because when he was being hidden by the head of the Maquis, he had sat outside under the tree when a large group, I don't know if you call it battalion, but a group of German soldiers marched by. And so Gabriel's sitting in his house going, oh my goodness. And Chuck was sitting under the tree just nonchalantly watching them. And so after they passed by, Gabriel called him in and said, you do that again, and you and me. And he pulled a finger across his throat saying, yeah, you're dead. And so Chuck then was hidden in this little shed, which is seriously boring for a guy like Chuck. And there was an engine or a motor that didn't work, and he fixed it. So he got back in Gabriel's good graces. It's a good thing he knew how to fix an engine.
He just finds his vehicle and fixes the engine on that, like MacGyver.
Yeah, he just fixes it.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And the story of carrying the man through the snow 3 miles, also an incredible. 30 miles.
15 to 30, something.
15
like that.
To 30 miles. Oh,
up
my gosh.
Up and down, if you can see the Pyrenees. I was looking at that this summer, took a picture and thought, I think I'd rather have a horse. Oh, my God, walking all that way? Wow.
Absolutely incredible story. Let's talk about you for a second here, okay. Victoria. I know that you have did you have an aspirations to be an actress, or did you do some acting?
I actually started out as a little kid on Peter Boyle's father's show in Philadelphia. He had a kiddie show, and he would tape it Friday night, and then it would air Saturday. And he showed the Little Rascals on his show, so I thought I was one of the Little Rascals. Oh, I mean, I started it, too, as soon as I could walk. We went under this trap door, and then when I was about 4 or 5, and I was too big, I thought, yes, I'm too big for the trap door. You know, kids like to be older and all that. So it kind of started then, and then I was always pretty good. But once I got to Hollywood, not really my kind of people, and I didn't quite figure that out. But I got a little bit into producing. I had a few projects optioned, and it was fascinating. But during that time, I still went around the world volunteering. I still did some financial consulting, and I would have loved to have done some roles, but I actually, once I started doing emceeing for Chuck and doing the Q&A, I really enjoyed that, and that's where I should have gone.
It seems like Chuck would have been the opposite of that Hollywood attitude, the absolute opposite.
But what was great about Chuck is he could handle almost anybody. So on the Right Stuff set, the movie where he was the consultant, did all the flying in it, he was like the grandfather for everybody, and he took each of them flying. Barbara Hershey said Sam Shepard, who didn't fly but did fly with Chuck, they thought, well, you know, if we go down, we're going down with the greatest aviator ever, so okay.
Were you with him on that set?
No, that was 82.
So it was before you guys met, right?
We met in 2000.
Did he talk about those things? Like, did he give you stories about, oh, I was on the movie set? I mean, it had to be kind of interesting just sitting there getting like the personal stuff from Chuck. I mean, I didn't mean to just sort of drift back into the Chuck because we're talking about
That's
you, but certainly that'd be pretty interesting just to hear some of the insights no one ever heard.
Well, here's what's really cool. When I first met him, he gave me his book to read. So he has two. He gave me Press On first, and he'd say, where are you in that? And I'd tell him, and then he'd tell me the whole story about what was going on in that whole thing. Same thing with Yeager. So I wish I'd recorded all that for posterity, but it was just so great to have all those stories from him. As to movie sets, not so much, unless we went to the 20th anniversary of The Right Stuff. They had a premiere, and so Barbara Hershey looked just like his wife. And so Barbara Hershey told more stories than Chuck did about those days. And so did Dennis Quaid and all those guys. And I have to tell you, Phil Kaufman has been so kind to me since Chuck died, and helped with the memorial, helped with the books, and so did Caleb Deschanel, told the best story for the memorial about Chuck. So I just really appreciate those guys.
Talking to Victoria Yeager, it's an interesting story, something that I read about, I guess it's your mother. Apparently your mother had something to do, influential, with Betty Ford. We all know about the Betty Ford Clinic. We know about her addictions at one point. And I think that probably the Betty Ford Clinic is probably the most, has become perhaps the most popular and most recognizable clinic for its type, in the world. Certainly one of the most recognizable. Your mother had something to do with that.
So my mother graduated from high school at age 15 and graduated with a master's at about age 20, 21. I thought it was 19, but I think it was a little bit older, in psychiatric social work. She wanted to go into family planning, but this guy called her up and said, I want you to start an alcoholism ward at the Haverford State Mental Hospital in outside Philadelphia. And she said, what's that? And so he said, well, you're smart, you can figure it out. And she was brilliant. So she did. She started the first dedicated alcoholism ward in the world. And she went on from there, because after a while doing just doing therapy was, it got a little old for her. And so she got into administration, and she got into setting up programs around the world. And when she had an opportunity with Betty Ford, in fact, a big producer in Hollywood wanted to do a TV movie about her, because when she had 15 minutes with Betty Ford, she didn't use it for herself, she used it for society. And she got Betty Ford to go public with her alcoholism and drug abuse. And that's when the door was open, it came out of the closet, and there started to be more treatment. And people had a lot more help, and now it's spoken about without shame. I mean, there might be some with some people, but there's, shame was what kept it in the closet and brought it right out in the 70s.
That must be something you're very proud of.
I'm extremely proud of it, but what she did was, when she went around the world volunteering, she took me with her, or she took another kid. There's four of us, but mostly me. And so I got to go to see tribes in Africa and help with different, with the alcoholism and drug abuse. There's a lot over there. And so it was fascinating, a big education. Once you get out of this country and around the world and you see how other people live, you seriously appreciate America and grateful that I was born.
What is it that you saw over there that made you just really appreciate this country even more?
Poverty, abuse, I mean, real poverty. In fact, when the Western world went in to try to stop female circumcision, the women there said, you're not helping, because we'd go over there, Americans would go over there, the West would go over there, and they'd try to fix it. Instead of talking to the locals, how do we fix it within the context of your world, of how you live and look at the world? And so there, so it's just, I learned so much, and talk about random. I would run into people just randomly, like when they were really anti-apartheid and they were calling Israel Zionist and likening it to apartheid. I met a woman who was in the opposition in Israel, and she said, well, we don't agree, but we've been here for thousands of years. We'll be here for thousands more, no matter what the others do. So it's an interesting view on history.
I just really recommend that you read Victoria's books. I mean, there's just so many interesting things. You know, one of the interesting things that I learned sitting here this morning having brunch with Victoria, something I didn't know. A lot of times there's stories that you really don't hear. Like, you don't necessarily hear these, they're kind of tucked away or what have you. But it's really interesting to me, because it's obviously well known and well documented, Victoria, that Chuck broke the speed of sound. People will say, well, he's the first person to break the speed of sound. He was. And I don't know that we break it down like this usually, because I've never heard anyone say he's the first man to break the speed of sound. But he is credited with that, because obviously credit where credit is due. But what's interesting to me is another story with the first woman to break the speed of sound. And the person that trained this woman, I would hope, I'm going to ask you if you could tell us about her. And Chuck trained her.
So Chuck broke the sound barrier in 1947, and then, of course, was went around and did talks for different congressmen in the Air Force, which he really didn't like to do because his job was flying, but he did it. And he was in the secretaries of the Air Force office, and in walked Jackie Cochran. Well, Jackie Cochran was married to the richest man in the world at the time, and she was an aviatrix, and she had started the WASPs, which were the Women's Auxiliary Service Pilots in World War II, which were very useful, very helpful ferrying planes around. And so so she asked him to help her break the sound barrier. So in 1953, he started training her. Now, she was used to having her way or the highway because of her wealth, and Chuck would take no, he would not allow that. He said, you are here on time, you're not going to waste anybody's time, or I'm not going to help you, which is unheard of. She could have had him maybe kicked out of the Air Force. But anyway, she listened to him, she respected him, he had a lot of poise, and so he trained her to break the sound barrier, the same way he did, he inched up to it in 9 powered flights. He inched up to the sound barrier. And then he flew Chase, which is the plane that's following the one that has the mission, to let her know if there's any smoke spewing out or if there are any problems that she can't see in the airplane. And so she did break the sound barrier, and they were fast friends for forever until she passed away in 79 or 80.
That's an incredible story. I mean, I think of the bravery that it takes, the adventurous spirit, just being brave to do what Chuck did, to do what this lady did, to try to, okay, I'm going to go try this, and I'm going to be the first woman. I don't even know if she thought about that, and she may not have even thought that. She may have just thought, listen, I just want to go do this too. And some people do things without actually breaking it down into, oh, I'm the first Black, or I'm the first Hispanic, or I'm the first woman, they're just out to do what they love to do, and they're leaving it at that, and then we all make a big deal about that. I don't know how much you want to get into this next thing, Victoria, but I'm just going to ask, and if you don't, that's fine. But another thing I learned sitting here having brunch with Victoria this morning is I mentioned Amelia Earhart. I don't know if you want to mention this or not, but, you know, in my mind, and for most of us who don't perhaps know the story within the story, you know, there was a report recently where some guy thinks that he's spotted this plane on the bottom of the ocean floor, and everyone always attributes it to, oh, it's got to be Amelia Earhart's lost plane and this and that. But, you know, there's a story behind that. I was thinking, and I mentioned on my show, it really takes someone who's extremely brave, to the extreme, in my opinion, extremely brave and adventurous to say, I'm going to be the first one to get in this airplane, the second one, really, but first woman, get in this airplane, and I'm going to go across the ocean, in this case, the Atlantic Ocean. The thought of that in an airplane and their what they were back then compared to now, you're flying over this ocean, which I'm just a chicken S to get on that plane even in the next month to go to Italy. I'm just so the opposite of this. So I find it fascinating that this woman did this. But again, there's a little story that we don't know perhaps about this.
So she's credited with being the first woman to fly across the Atlantic, but she actually was the passenger. It was somebody else flying, and it wasn't a woman. So somebody did some great marketing on Amelia Earhart, and Chuck didn't care for that because she wasn't that great a pilot. And Jackie Cochran should have been getting all these kudos for all the things she was doing. And Jackie was doing it to advance women in aviation, not only for herself, but she was advancing women, whereas Amelia Earhart, not so much. Amelia Earhart, there's a story too that she actually didn't get lost. She just wanted to get out of the limelight.
Really?
Yeah.
So what would that lead to if she didn't get lost? What does that mean? Like the plane, there's a story maybe the plane didn't get lost, didn't go down, she just went and hid out, I'm not sure.
Well, some guy at some event accosted Chuck and was telling him that and said, you know all about it because she hid out at Jackie Cochran, she had a baby out of wedlock and was raising her daughter, and she wanted to raise her daughter out of the limelight.
I'm sure Chuck knows all about that.
Oh, sure. And Chuck said, you can imagine what Chuck said. It's a 7-letter word, 2 syllables, begins with B, and he walked off. And I just stayed and said, okay, tell me more about this. And I don't know if it's true or not, but I thought, you know, it's amazing, this mythic thing that Amelia Earhart has, and it really should be Jackie Cochran that should get the kudos. Not to take 100% away from Amelia Earhart, but she's not as accomplished as Jackie Cochran or even as Pancho Barnes.
Tell us about Pancho.
So Pancho was the first, she's organized the Stunt Association in Hollywood. And she was a daredevil female pilot, one of the first, if not the first. She also did some gun running in Mexico. So she was a colorful person, but she also had the Happy Bottom Riding Club at Edwards Air Force Base. At the time, it was Muroc Air Force Base. And she was the one that offered a free steak to the first person who broke the sound barrier. She adored Chuck because he was not a braggart. Chuck,
a free steak?
In those days, that was something.
That's something, yeah.
But Chuck, somebody said to me when they heard a speech that he gave at the National Air and Space Museum, is that he's so matter-of-fact about what he did. And the rest of us are going, oh, my gosh. And so, but he was. And so he wasn't a braggart. He just did what he did. And there were, as you know, a lot of braggarts. But so she really admired, Pancho admired him, and so did Jack. And they'd be sitting on the other side of him at a dinner event. And they, how can you stand that witch? And you know, how can you stand that witch? Because they were opposite. One had come from nothing, Jackie Cochran, and risen to married to the richest guy in the world, as I said. And the other one had come from society, actually out of Philadelphia, where I'm from. And she sort of went and did her own thing. In those days, that was a big deal to go and be on your own. She got married and divorced him, and big deal. But her grandfather was the first balloonist that used it in the Civil War. And so they were doing recce's from this,
really?
And saying the positions of where the enemy was. Now, I don't know why they didn't put some guns in there and shoot. It would have been over in days, right? But her father was Thaddeus Lowe. And then they also owned the Barclay, which used to be a hotel and was the place to go for dinner when you were, you know, doing a five-star she society dinner. I'd go there for my birthday every year. So.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm just fascinated by your stories. I really am learning. I love learning about all of these little facts I never knew. I don't know why the craziest thoughts going through my mind. It's so absurd, but that's just my mind, Victoria. It just is.
That's what we like about you.
Thank you. Thank you. Can you say that again?
That's what we like about you, Pat.
Thank you. Continuing my conversation with Victoria Yeager, and you were telling us about
watching
the right stuff with Chuck.
So the only time we did was at the 20th anniversary premiere in Hollywood, where Barbara Hershey was there, and Gordo Cooper, the real Gordon Cooper was there. He was sort of towards the end of his life getting dementia. But anyway, I was sitting there with Chuck, and every now and again he'd say, oh, BS. So it was pretty fun.
That's so great. Oh, that's BS. Oh, my God. I love that so much. Wow, that's funny.
And it was right after we invaded and supposedly won the war in 23 days in Afghanistan. And sitting next to me was the commander at Edwards Air Force Base. And he said, we couldn't have won a war in 23 days without Chuck Yeager. And I said, oh, gosh, connect those dots after the movie, though.
Oh.
Well, it's because of breaking the sound barrier and all the testing that he did really put us way ahead of the enemy.
Absolutely.
I mean, they didn't know about the flying tail for the X-1 until in 1953 they didn't have flying tails. So 6 years later.
You know, when you hear Victoria say that, you think about that. Now, that's a piece of history that we need to know, because think about what she's saying. Without that technology, without that edge, this world may be a very, very different place that we're living in. We needed that advantage over the enemy. And when you bring this up, not only the break, everything that he accomplished, I don't believe that it is overstating things to say he really was a key person in changing the future of the world and where we are presently.
That's true, and he, the last job he had too was director of safety in the Air Force. And one of the, I just want to tell you quickly a story. So there was this one airplane that everybody's crashing in, and he went up to altitude and he figured out what was wrong. The maintenance guy was putting the bolt in upside down. And so people, he said, I figured it out and came and landed.
EC-10, what was it?
I can't remember what it was.
So they were putting the bolt upside down, and he figured that. How do you figure that?
Well, the flaps or whatever it was going the wrong way. And so he figured that out at altitude. But he was the director of safety, and he saved millions, tens of millions of lives, because the civilian world took on what he suggested. When he came in as director of safety, it was primary cause and secondary causes. So they'd fix the primary cause, and then they wouldn't fix the secondary cause until they became a primary cause. So he made it an all-cause accident. And NASA, I'm kind of fudging the numbers just a little, but not much. It's just for illustrative purposes. So they found 36 things wrong with the shuttle. They fixed 34, 35, and 36 were the tiles. So NASA kind of poo-pooed the Air Force too much and got into trouble because of it. He was amazing. There's so many different facets of him. You and I could go on for days, right? But
right,
I think you gotta go.
I have so many more questions, but yeah, we'll wrap it up there. So here's what I want to finish things off by thanking you, Victoria. It's really a pleasure to get to meet you. I really appreciate you taking your time to sit and have brunch with me this morning. It's been absolutely delightful. I feel like we could have done this with or without any kind of a conversation. You're just a good person. I really enjoy your company. I appreciate all the insight, and I would encourage people, and I'm going to let you tell everyone how they can find your books, but I really would encourage, if you think about this man and think about Victoria and how much that means that this man was in love with her, and she loved him. And we hear now what a compassionate and nice man, a little gruff at times, but I would be too if sometimes the way people approach you and things, you're kind of, oh, geez, you know. But so I get all of that. I could be that way myself a little bit. Maybe we all can. I don't know. But I would encourage you to read her books, 101 Jaegerisms, and then I'm going to let you promote your new book again and tell everyone where they can get your books.
So you can get the books at rightstuffstore.com, R-I-G-H-T, stuffstore.com. And the second book is What a Ride, Chuck Yeager, What a Ride, My Amazing Life with the Original Right Stuff, Chuck Yeager. It's really fun. It's really, and you know what? I liked his gruffness. If Chuck, you knew that if you were there, Chuck wanted you to be there. He was very clear. So I was just grateful. I just very, very, very blessed.
And we'll end it on this. God bless Chuck. God bless you. Thank you. We're at Wings at the airport. Wings Restaurant at the airport in Auburn. Pat's Peeps is not only about bringing you a podcast and bringing you interesting stories and interesting people such as Victoria, but it's also about supporting local business, mom-and-pop businesses. We just met the owner of this fine restaurant. She is back there working very hard, working and cooking. She's a hard worker. Her kids came through this restaurant and worked here as well. Maybe you could tell us her name, and we'll give a little plug to Wings here. Give it a shot. Look, I'm not flying a plane. I'm not getting in any of these airplanes. No offense to anyone, but I'm here to have a great breakfast, so please support local businesses. I had a chicken fried steak this morning with biscuits and gravy. I enjoyed it. What'd you think of your food?
And don't forget, it's Fish Fridays. They always have fish and chips on Fridays. That's why I wanted to come here on Friday.
Nice.
Chuck and I used to come here a lot. I haven't been here in probably 5 or 8 years, maybe 10, but we used to come here. We'd fly down here, and then he'd give me the controls to fly back. It was great fun. And Pat, I'm enjoying very much hanging out with you. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. And what's the owner's name?
Connie. We've known her for years.
Well, thank you, Connie. And I've enjoyed hanging out with you too, Victoria. Thank you very much for being my guest on Pat's Peeps number 57. Really working hard on this.
Great.
Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Awesome. Wow. Hey, it's Pat. So, good evening. That was my morning. I just want to say hi. I know we're at almost, an hour here. I just wanted to say hello. It was really nice meeting her, as you heard. What a great person. And I hope you'll check out her books. And as we continue to remember the legacy of Chuck Yeager and get to know Victoria as well. So, and thank you. I just wanted to pop in here
and say thank you for listening tonight. Now, we are expecting any moment here on the first day of March of 2024 to receive a bunch of snow. I just got a call, Darlene with a Y, up in who is about, I don't know, 6 miles above me in the foothills. She said she's getting a lot of hail, but we're expecting a lot of snow and wind and rain. And I do see a lot of rain coming down right now, and it's cold. So here I sit by the fire. And you know what? The interesting thing is they gave me the night off from work, which I don't like taking the night off from my show, my radio show, the Pat Walsh Show, heard nationally, internationally on iHeartRadio. But I work at KFPK in Sacramento, home of Tom Sullivan and Rush Limbaugh. All those guys got their start there, as I always like to point out. Kitty O'Neill, my longtime colleague. But I don't like to miss my show, but they thought, and it could happen, I don't know, I could be snowed in within a matter of hours. And I know I've mentioned that before, so we'll wait and see and let you know. I'll let you know what happens, but what I am going to do is I'm going to pop on the air. BC is going to be filling in for me, Bruce Campbell, who does a wonderful job, just a good friend of mine for years. So give him a listen. But I'm going to be calling in on the show tonight. So I'll be calling in on my own radio show tonight to talk to Bruce. So if you listen to my Pat's Peeps podcast, if you listen to my show, just know how grateful I am. And I do feel like hearing some music tonight, so why not? So I reached into my, as I always tell you, into my rare 45 collection. I came out with this song, and I always loved this one. I got excited when I picked this one out. I went, oh, wow, okay, I'll play this one. It's on Smash Records. It's a white label. And as I always tell you, on the label, not for sale. This is a, let's see, what does this one say? For broadcast only, not for sale. White Smash Records label. And it does have a different song on both sides. It looks like it's in decent condition. Certainly has some use to it. But it, like I say, I always loved this song. It's a song written by Stephen Stello, Michael Brown, Bob Khalili, Howie and Tony Sassoni, for the band. The artist that's performing this released as a single in July of 1966. Steve Martin Caro featured on the lead vocals, spent 13 weeks on the U.S. charts with a top spot at number 5. The song has been widely considered the quintessential Baroque pop genre, if you've ever heard of that. The Baroque pop genre. Even I don't think I can describe that. And I'm a music lover and I know music, but I don't even know if I can describe the Baroque pop genre. But as Marshall Crenshaw once explained, there's, quote, something about this song that's one of the most powerful songs I've ever heard. Just in terms of provoking an emotional reaction. And I get that with this song for whatever reason. You know what? The one I get that one with all the time when I hear it is Procol Harum's Whiter Shade of Pale. It's the keyboard. There's something about that song. Anyhow. So this particular song did very well, as I said. I always hate quoting Rolling Stone, but I guess in this context, it when it used to be good, whatever. But it's, you know, it just tells you where they rated it, but not that it matters. Anyhow, they rated it number 220 in the 500 greatest songs of all time. Lots of cover versions. Four Tops, Southside Johnny, Asbury Jukes, and some others did some covers of this song. Al Rogers drums, John Abbott on the bass, George Fluffer Hirsch on the guitar, Mike Brown on the harpsichord. That's the instrument I was trying to think of the other day. That's what it is about this song. There's a harpsichord in it. That's it. Jackie Kelso, who gets no credit on the record, flute. friends on strings, John Abbott, arranger, Steve Martin Caro, as I mentioned, lead vocal, George Cameron and Tom Finn on the backing vocals, went to number 3 in Canada. Number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100. Number 2 on the Cashbox Top 100 in New Zealand. They liked it so much, it went to number 5. From the left bank, it is a song called Walk Away, Renee. The harpsichord in there, it's perfect. Michael Brown has stated that the song is one of a number that he wrote about Renee Fladen. Later, Fladen Com, the then girlfriend of the Left Bank's bassist Tom Finn, but the object of Brown's affection. She was associated with the band for a few weeks and was described as a free-spirited tall blonde. Brown wrote it a month after he met her, Walk Away Renee, one of a series of love songs, as he was infatuated with her. He wrote it for his own muse. So let's flip it over and see what's on the other side. Because I'm being honest with you, I don't know a lot of other songs by the Left Bank. So we're going to hear this one together. I've never played this. This is a song called I Haven't Got the Nerve. I Haven't Got the Nerve. And this is about, like, here's, so on the one side, you have a guy who's infatuated with the guy's girlfriend in the band. So he writes about that. And on this particular song, they write about, look, man, I don't have the nerve to tell you, just leave me alone. Please, leave me alone. Forget about it. Please go away. So let's listen to it together. I haven't got the nerve, Left Bank. Love ending it on a skip. It tells you the record is real. There's that harpsichord. That's pretty cool. You incorporate that harpsichord. A lot of 60s stuff did that, you know. The nerve to go on any longer. I'm already 1 hour, 2 minutes, 40 seconds. I'm going to wrap it up there. Thank you, my friends. Thank you so much for listening. Pat's Peeps 57. We'll let you know if I got snowed in. I got to go on a radio with Bruce. Thank you. See you for Pat's Peeps 58.